children. Monday the 27th. I paid a visit to St. Andrews, once the largest city in the kingdom. It was 8 times as large as it is now, and a place of very great trade. But the sea rushing from the northeast gradually destroyed the harbor and trade together. In consequence of this, whole streets that were are now meadows and gardens. 3 broad, straight, handsome streets remain, all pointing at the old cathedral. This, by the ruins, appears to have been above 300 feet long and proportionately broad and high. It seems to have exceeded York Minster and to have at least equaled any cathedral in England. Another church afterward, used in its stead, bears the date 1174. A steeple standing near the cathedral is thought to have stood 1,300 years. Wesley criticizes the Scotch universities. What is left of St. Leonard's College is only a heap of ruins. 2 colleges remain. One of them has a tolerable square, but all the windows are broken, like those of a brothel. We were informed that the students do this before they leave the college. Where are their blessed governors in the meantime? Are they all fast asleep? The other college is a mean building but has a handsome library newly erected. In the 2 colleges, we learned, were about 70 students, nearly the same number as at Old Aberdeen. Those at New Aberdeen are not more numerous, neither those at Glasgow. In Edinburgh, I suppose, there are 100. So 4 universities contain 310 students. These all come to their several colleges in November and return home in May. So they may study 5 months in the year and lounge all the rest. Oh, where was the common sense of those who instituted such colleges? In the English colleges, everyone may reside all the year, as all my pupils did. I should have thought myself little better than a highwayman if I had not lectured them every day in the year but Sundays. Friday, June 28th. I am 73 years old and far abler to preach than I was at 23. What natural means has God used to produce so wonderful an effect? 1, continual exercise and change of air by traveling above 4,000 miles in a year. 2, constant rising at 4. 3, the ability, if ever I want, to sleep immediately. 4, the never losing a night's sleep in my life. 5, 2 violent fevers and 2 deep consumptions. These, it is true, were rough medicines, but they were of admirable service, causing my flesh to come again as the flesh of a little child. May I add, lastly, evenness of temper? I feel and grieve, but by the grace of God I fret at nothing. But still, the help that is done upon earth, he doeth it himself. And this he doeth in answer to many prayers. Smuggling in Cornwall. Saturday, August 17. We found Mr. Hoskins at Coubert in Cornwall, alive, but just tottering over the grave. I preached in the evening on 2 Corinthians 5, 1-4, probably the last sermon he will hear from me. I was afterward inquiring if that scandal of Cornwall, the plundering of wrecked vessels, still subsisted. He said, as much as ever, only the Methodists will have nothing to do with it. But 3 months since, a vessel was wrecked on the south coast, and the tinners presently seized on all the goods, and even broke in pieces a new coach, which was on board, and carried every scrap of it away. But is there no way to prevent this shameful breach of all the laws, both of religion and humanity? Indeed, there is. The gentry of Cornwall may totally prevent it whenever they please. Let them only see that the laws be strictly executed upon the next plunderers, and after an example is made of 10 of these, the next wreck will be unmolested. Nay, there is a milder way. Let them only agree together to discharge any tinner or laborer that is concerned in the plundering of a wreck, and advertise his name that no Cornish gentleman may employ him any more, and neither tinner nor laborer will any more be concerned in that bad work. Sunday the 18th. The passage to the sands being bad for a chase, I rode on horseback to St. Agnes, where the rain constrained me to preach in the house. As we rode back to Red Ruth, it poured down a main and found its way through all our clothes. I was tired when I came in, but after sleeping a quarter of an hour, all my weariness was gone. Chapter 18. On the Isle of Man, City Road Chapel, Wesleyville visits Lord George Gordon. In Bethnal Green Hamlet, 1777, Wednesday, January 1st, we met as usual to renew our covenant with God. It was a solemn season wherein many found his power present to heal and were enabled to urge their way with strength renewed. Thursday the 2nd, I began expounding in order the book of Ecclesiastes. I never before had so clear a sight either of the meaning or the beauties of it. Neither did I imagine that the several parts of it were so exquisite a manner connected together, all tending to prove that grand truth, that there is no happiness out of God. Wednesday the 15th, I began visiting those of our society who lived in Bethnal Green Hamlet. Many of them I found in such poverty as few can conceive without seeing it. Oh, why do not all the rich that fear God constantly visit the poor? Can they spend part of their spare time better? Certainly not. So they will find in that day when every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor. Such another scene I saw the next day in visiting another part of the society. I have not found any such distress, no, not in the prison of Newgate. One poor man was just creeping out of his sickbed to his ragged wife and three little children, who were more than half naked and the very picture of famine. When one brought in a loaf of bread, they all ran, seized upon it, and tore it in pieces in an instant. Who would not rejoice that there is another world? City Road Chapel begun. Monday, April 21st, was the day appointed for laying the foundation of the new chapel. The rain befriended us much by keeping away thousands who purposed to be there, but there were still such multitudes that it was with great difficulty I got through them to lay the first stone. Upon this was a plate of brass, covered with another stone, on which was engraved. This was laid by Mr. John Wesley on April 1st, 1777. Probably this will be seen no more by any human eye, but will remain there till the earth and the works thereof are burned up. Sunday the 27th. The sun breaking out, I snatched the opportunity of preaching to many thousands in Moorfields. All were still as night while I showed how the Son of God was manifested to destroy the works of the devil. See 1 John 3:8. Wednesday, May 24th. At 11, I preached at Pocklington with an eye to the death of that lovely woman, Mrs. Cross. A gay young gentleman with a young lady stepped in, stayed 5 minutes, and went out again with as easy an unconcern as if they had been listening to a ballad singer. I mentioned to the congregation the deep folly and ignorance implied in such behavior. These pretty fools never thought that for this very opportunity they are to give an account before men and angels. In the evening I preached at York. I would gladly have rested the next day, feeling my breast much out of order. But notice, having been given of my preaching at Tadcaster, I set out at 9 in the morning. About 10 the chaise broke down. I borrowed a horse, but as he was none of the easiest, in riding 3 miles I was so thoroughly electrified that the pain in my breast was quite cured. I preached in the evening at York, on Friday took the diligence, and on Saturday afternoon came to London. Wesley in the Isle of Man. Friday the 30th, I went on to Wychhaven, where I found a little vessel waiting for me. After preaching in the evening, I went on board about 8 o'clock, and before 8 in the morning landed at Douglas in the Isle of Man. Douglas exceedingly resembles Newlyn in Cornwall, both in its situation, form, and buildings, only it is much larger and has few houses equal to most in Penzance. As soon as we landed, I was challenged by Mr. Booth, who had seen me in Ireland and whose brother had been for many years a member of the society in Coolilaw. A chaise was provided to carry me to Castletown. I was greatly surprised at the country. All the way from Douglas to Castletown, it is as pleasant and as well cultivated as most parts of England, with many gentlemen's seats. Castletown a good deal resembles Galway, only it is not so large. At six I preached near the castle, I believe, to all the inhabitants of the town. Two or three gay young women showed they knew nothing about religion. All the rest were deeply serious. Sunday, June 1st, at six I preached in our own room, and, my surprise, saw all the gentlewomen there. Young as well as old were now deeply affected and would fain have had me stay, were it but for an hour or two, but I was forced to hasten away in order to be at Peeltown before the service began. Mr. Corbett said he would gladly have asked me to preach, but that the bishop had forbidden him, and had also forbidden all his clergy to admit any Methodist preacher to the Lord's Supper. But is any clergyman obliged, either in law or conscience, to obey such a prohibition? By no means. Men, Monday the 2nd. The greater part of them were present at 5 in the morning. A more loving, simple-hearted people than this I never saw. And no wonder, for they have but 6 papists and no dissenters in the island. It is supposed to contain nearly 30,000 people, remarkably courteous and humane. Ever since smuggling was suppressed, they diligently cultivate their land, and they have a large herring fishery so that the country improves daily. The old castle at Peel, as well as the cathedral built within it, is only a heap of ruins. It was very large and exceedingly strong with many brass guns, but they are now removed to England. I set out for Douglas in the one-horse chaise, Mrs. Smith riding with me. In about an hour, in spite of all I could do, the headstrong horse ran the wheel against a large stone and the chaise overturned in a moment. But we fell so gently on smooth grass that neither of us was hurt at all. In the evening, I preached at Douglas to nearly as large a congregation as that at Peel, but not nearly so serious. Before 10, we went on board, and about 12 on Tuesday the 3rd, landed at Whitehaven. I preached at 5 in the afternoon, hastening to Cockermouth. I found a large congregation waiting in the castle yard. Between 9 and 10, I took chaise, and about 10 on Wednesday the 4th, reached Settle. In the evening, I preached near the marketplace, and all but 2 or 3 gentlefolks were seriously attentive. Thursday the 5th, about noon, I came to Otley. Taught by a chaise boy. Monday, July 21st. Having been much pressed to preach at Chatterson, a colliery 6 or 7 miles from Pembroke, I began soon after 7. The house was presently filled and all the space about the doors and windows. The poor people drank in every word. I had finished my sermon when a gentleman, violently pressing in, bade the people get home and mind their business. As he used some bad words, my driver spoke to him. He fiercely said, "Do you think I need to be taught by a chaise boy?" The lad replying, "Really, sir, I do think so." The conversation ended. Tuesday, August the 5th. Our yearly conference began. I now particularly inquired, as that report had been spread far and wide, of every assistant, "Have you reason to believe, from your own observation, that the Methodists are a fallen people? Is there a decay or an increase in the work of God where you have been? Are the societies in general more dead or more alive to God than they were some years ago?" The almost universal answer was, "If we must know them by their fruits, there is no decay in the work of God among the people in general. The societies are not dead to God. They are as much alive as they have been for many years. And we look on this report as a mere device of Satan to make our hands hang down." Are the Methodists a fallen people? But how can this question be decided? You and you can judge no farther than you see. You cannot judge of one part by another, of the people of London supposed by those of Bristol, and none but myself has an opportunity of seeing them throughout the three kingdoms. But to come to a short issue, in most places the Methodists are still a poor, despised people, laboring under reproach and many inconveniences. Therefore, wherever the power of God is not, they decrease. By this, then, you may form a sure judgment. Do the Methodists in general decrease in number? Then they decrease in grace. They are a fallen, or at least a falling, people. But they do not decrease in number. They continually increase. Therefore, they are not a fallen people. The conference concluded on Friday, as it began, in much love. Wesley starts a magazine. Monday, November 14. Having been many times desired for nearly 40 years to publish a magazine, I at length complied, and I now began to collect materials for it. If it once begin, I incline to think it will not end but with my life. Wednesday, December 17. Just at this time, there was a combination among many of the post-chaise drivers on the Bath Road, especially those that drove in the night, to deliver their passengers into each other's hands. One driver stopped at the spot they had appointed, where another waited to attack the chaise. In consequence of this, many were robbed, but I had a good protector still. I have traveled all roads by day and by night for these 40 years, and never was interrupted yet. 1778, Friday, January 27th, was the day appointed for the national fast, and it was observed with due solemnity. All shops were shut up, all was quiet in the streets, all places of public worship were crowded. No food was served up in the king's house till 5 o'clock in the evening. Thus far, at least, we acknowledge God may direct our paths. Sunday, June 28th. I am this day 75 years old, and I do not find myself, blessed be God, any weaker than I was at 25. This also hath God wrought. Wesley discusses old sermons. Tuesday, September 1st, I went to Tiverton. I was musing here on what I heard a good man say long since. Once in 7 years I burn all my sermons, for it is a shame if I cannot write better sermons now than I could 7 years ago. Whatever others can do, I really cannot. I cannot write a better sermon on the Good Steward than I did 7 years ago. I cannot write a better on the Great Assize than I did 20 years ago. I cannot write a better on the use of money than I did nearly 30 years ago. Nay, I know not that I can write a better on the circumcision of the heart than I did 45 years ago. Perhaps, indeed, I may have read 500 or 600 books more than I had then, and may know a little more history or natural philosophy than I did, but I am not sensible that this has made any essential addition to my knowledge in divinity. 40 years ago, I knew and preached every Christian doctrine which I preach now. Among the Ruins, Thursday the 3rd. About noon, I preached at Cathanger, about 8 miles from Taunton. It was an exceedingly large house, built, as the inscription over the gate testifies, in the year 1555 by Sergeant Walsh, who had then 8,000 pounds a year, perhaps more than equal to 20,000 now. But the once famous family is now forgotten. The estate is moldered almost into nothing, and 3/4 of the magnificent buildings lie level with the dust.